Ready to lose 40 plus pounds without giving up happy hours, weekend brunches, or date nights? Then it's time to uncover the hidden link between binge eating and toxic relationships and finally break free from both. Welcome to the Hungry for Love podcast with Jillian Scott. Y'all ready? Let's go. Hey, hey, welcome back. All right, so this week's episodes are going to be a little bit deeper, maybe even somewhat heavier topics. And it was interesting. I was thinking about what I wanted the episodes to look like through the rest of this month and in through August. And there was a part of me that was like, ooh, don't talk about suffering. Don't talk about depression. Don't talk about these heavy things. Don't be a downer. Stay the cheerleader. Pretend everything is good. And not necessarily pretend, but let's just look at the bright side. And as a coach, I want to be a motivator. I want to encourage people. I want to help them find that deep conviction and grit and resilience. And also, life can be hard and it can be challenging. And so even in bringing these podcast episodes up, I was like, this is exactly why I am creating content. It's why I have the podcast. It's why I have this mission of I want to talk about and bring to light all of those shameful things that we don't want to talk about, binge eating, regaining weight, binge drinking, and really have an honest conversation and create a space where you don't feel so alone, where you can hear this and maybe you think of a close friend or family member and you can share it with them. But maybe you're going through this as well yourself. And so it was so ironic, I guess, because the reason that I was thinking about not doing these podcasts of I don't want to be a downer, I want to keep things peppy, I want to look on the bright side, I want to talk about the good stuff, I want to motivate and inspire and encourage. Those are all the reasons why we often will suffer in silence. It's why we don't reach out for help. It's why we don't get the support that we need. This is part of the problem, is feeling like we have to stay positive. We have to look on the bright side. Social media is full of everybody's highlight reel, the best hits, things like that. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to show the good and wanting to celebrate the good and to be positive. But something I'll talk about in this next episode is going to be this concept of toxic positivity as well as permanent negativity. And often as narc survivors and growing up in these types of dynamics or being married to somebody for a while where it's like we can either skew to toxic positivity of we're never going to allow a negative emotion, we're just going to stay positive, even though that's not the human experience. Or we tend to skew to the other end of the pendulum of our brain is constantly wired to focus on the negative, look at the bad, indulge in worst case scenarios, things like that. So there's definitely some overlap between these two topics. And as I was flushing it out and thinking through outlines for these, because I want there to be some kind of flow and for it all to be coherent, there will be a fair amount of like stream of consciousness. And just as I'm thinking about it and putting these together, but going through my own short depression, but it was very intense. And going through that really sparked some awareness around why I wasn't even telling close friends about it. It really helped me to see how much suffering we are doing and how often we are trained and we've been trained from childhood to suffer in silence. This can come up typically around shame. So it comes up with food, with binge eating and emotional eating or emotional drinking. It comes up with money shame and spending. I was in a program recently where this came back to mind. I think it was about a month ago when there was a woman who got on the call and she was sharing how much shame she had about money that she had invested and spent on her business and hadn't yet recouped and created a return on that investment yet. And there was so much shame and so much suffering. And she was doing it silently. And what I realized on that call was that so many of us in the room could relate. So many of us had been there, and I guarantee there were a lot of people who were probably right there with her in that moment. And they were like, yes, I feel it too. We don't talk about it. We don't bring it to light because of the shame, and we end up suffering in silence. And I want to break that. I want to break that habit. I want to break that trend. And I want to be a safe place for my clients where they can come and share anything. You can share the wins, you can share the success, but I am here for the hard times, the good, the bad, and the ugly. This is where I'm going to hold so much space for you and your emotions so that you get better at handling them too. Because so often we don't have that in our lives. We don't have that space. We don't have that container where it is, where we are really truly safe to feel and be with any emotion. And so the more that I can be with my emotions, the more I have space to be with other people's. And that comes into parenting too. Like the more I have space and compassion for myself to hold every emotion and to be able to allow it and process it, the more I also have space to allow and handle my son when he's having a bit of a tantrum or a meltdown. And sometimes I can tell when he's tired or not feeling well, because sometimes they will just, they'll come on so quick. And I think I shared this story once before, but he had asked for sushi one night when I picked him up from school. I think this was the first night I was getting him. So it was a Monday night, and I had already planned out dinner. We weren't going to sushi. I usually get him a little bit late on Mondays because we go to yoga. And so timing-wise, it just wasn't going to work. And he just lost it, like complete meltdown. And in, I think about how other people may have handled that, or even how like my dad would have handled that. And it would have been like yelling, stop that. Like, you're not allowed to do that. And really it was like, nope, I can hold so much space that he really has this desire for sushi. And it's hard for him to put off that short-term gratification, even if we're going to go get it tomorrow, which we ended up doing. But just being able to allow and recognize, yeah, he is learning how to process and regulate his emotions, how to regulate his body and his nervous system. And right now, he just does not have the capacity to be able to do that. Most adults don't have the capacity to do that. I certainly cannot expect a four-year-old to. So this is where, so today, I want to bring this back to anytime we are suffering, I would say there's a lot of shame, disappointment, frustration. I think some self-loathing can come into play here, but I really want to talk about like why this happens. Because as I was thinking about what I was experiencing earlier this year, I started to piece it back to, oh, this is what I did with food and with binge eating. There was a lot of suffering and silence because I didn't want anyone to know because there was so much shame. It was so hard to get to the point where I was like, I can't do this on my own. I can't figure this out. And we do this in marriage. And really, I could trace it back to childhood. One of the big issues is not sharing, not talking about it. It's one aspect is we don't feel safe or comfortable talking about it. We don't want to seem weak, like we don't have willpower or self-control, or especially with food or alcohol. Maybe we don't want to admit and show how bad things really are. You might feel helpless to change anything. You might be trying to protect somebody else's reputation or your own reputation. You don't want other people to think poorly of you. Maybe you have a hard time asking for help. So even just sharing the challenges and the real struggle, the real pain you might be experiencing can feel really hard, because not only can you not ask for help, but it's like we can't show that things are bad. And I'll share more about my experience next week. But one of my goals for myself has been, I don't want life after divorce to be this horrible, terrible experience. I want to be the poster child for life after divorce, especially from dysfunctional patterns, to be amazing and empowering and encouraging. And it doesn't have to be a struggle. There are a lot of voices out there talking about what a struggle life is like after divorce. And I've heard it where even coaches will be like, yep, you're going to struggle that first year or two after divorce. And I was just like, F that. No, no, I do not want that to be true. And I think it's like holding space for two things to be true at once, that we can have the 50-50 of life, that times can feel hard and challenging, and times can also be really good, and not letting the negative be the narrative of this experience, while also not fighting and resisting the negative that does come. I think I was so wanting to avoid the 50-50. It was like, nope, can't experience any negative because I don't want that. I don't want my 1 or 2 years after divorce to be this struggle or this horrible experience. I think part of me wanted to prove them wrong. Then when I was struggling, it was like, no, 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 I am on a mission. I've got something to prove. This cannot be happening. We can be in resistance, resisting just what's happening, and we create unnecessary suffering for ourselves. We make it even worse. There's the hard of, I'm going to learn how to evaluate and figure out why I was emotionally eating last night, or why I drank a bottle of wine when I said I wasn't going to drink at all. There's the hard and sitting with the discomfort of feeling disappointed in yourself, noticing that there's some shame and regret that comes up, but still trying to get to a place of compassion and self-love so you can evaluate and learn from it and like really understand what's going on. What are you trying to escape? That in itself, that's hard. But when you add on this self-loathing of you're so terrible, I can't believe you haven't figured this out yet. You know what to do. You just need more willpower. Just like your dad said or your mom said, you're no good. When our brain goes into that really judgy, shamey voice and those narky voices come out, whether it's things you say to yourself, whether it's things other people have said to you, this becomes unnecessary suffering. We take what feels hard and where we might be really challenged in some ways, and it's like we keep heaping more negativity on top of that. And it's unnecessary in the sense that it is your thoughts. It's what you can control. We can't control what other people say to us. We can choose to leave the room if they want to cuss at us, for example. We can choose what we do, but I can't control the words that come out of somebody else's mouth. I can choose whether or not I stay to hear them or listen to them. But then anything in my head, my thoughts, like those are mine now. I own them, which means I also have the power to change them. Okay, so let me break this down because I realized, I was like, oh my gosh, I've been doing this my whole life. There was such awareness of, oh, of course I did this. This has been my pattern. It's what I learned. It's how I survived. It really is a survival mechanism. Growing up, I never liked my dad, really disliked him. And I could tell, like, I never had a good relationship with him. And there were a couple times in life over the years where I was doing something that was of interest to him. So if I was playing a sport that he was interested in, then it was like maybe we got a little bit closer. But I really didn't like him. And if I was really honest with myself, I hated him. And I felt a lot of shame because I should not be hating my dad. And I felt even more shame because my biological dad wasn't in the picture. So here it is, like this new man who's been in my life as dad. And I should be grateful for him. I should be grateful that I have somebody like this in my life. But he was so mean and angry. He was condescending, passive aggressive, snarky. Even as a kid, he would make snide comments towards us, towards me and my sisters. And so growing up, I never liked him. But I also never told my mom how I felt. I didn't want to make things worse for me if she talked to him about it. I didn't want there to be repercussions for me from him. I don't want to make them fight. I didn't want to be the cause of their fight. Because I already had a sense, even from a young age, maybe 8 to 10 years old, of they fight about money. Money is scarce. They fight about us kids. This isn't good. I think he saw my mom as favoring me. And so he would try to offset the quote favoring and favor my sister. But then I just felt unloved. And so it was just really hard. But I also felt really helpless. What good is it going to do? It's probably going to make things worse if I do bring things up. And that may have happened. So I never told her how bad things were. And as a kid, it was like, I learned I just have to suffer in silence. It doesn't matter if I say anything. It's only going to make it worse. There's nothing I can do about it. No good will come from talking about this. So I never told her how bad it was. And they're now getting divorced, but she stayed in this really dysfunctional marriage. And her intention was to try to make things good for us. She didn't want us to have to change schools. She really did it for us as young kids. She did it trying to be a good Christian. And when I told her how I really felt and some of the experiences I had, she felt terrible. She felt so guilty and so bad. And I don't think she realized how much abuse we were experiencing as kids. She thought she was taking the brunt of it, but she didn't realize how much it was impacting us. Had I said something, maybe it would have changed things, maybe not. And the dominoes had to play out the way that they did. Like, this has helped me to be a better person, a better coach, to better understand things. Like, yes, it did create more trauma. And I think there's also this stigma of like divorce creates trauma instead of divorce can mitigate trauma. Divorce can prevent more trauma. Like, what if divorce was actually the positive thing that prevented more trauma from happening? It's like, things that typically are, one, not taught in the church, for sure. And two, just as society as a whole and as a standard, it's like anytime we talk about divorce, people think of it as like a failed marriage. I'm going to do a whole episode on divorce, and I'm going to share more of my story and just my take on divorce too, because I am proud that I got divorced because I'm proud that I'm breaking cycles. I am proud that I'm standing up for myself. I am proud that I'm giving my son at least part of the time an emotionally healthier environment to grow up in. And there are things that I couldn't see. I couldn't see 5 years ago. I couldn't see 10 years ago. And that's okay. And there's a lot of love and compassion for myself. And my goal is I hope that my son can break cycles even faster than I did. I think we're experiencing this great awakening and this great shift to where I expect he's probably going to have some trauma. He's going to have questions. He's likely going to need therapy for something. He's going to need coaching for something. And that's okay. And I can do what I can to try to create an environment that is emotionally safe, where I'm not just giving in to every whim. I'm not being a permissive parent, but I'm not being this dictator that's like, I'm going to bend you to my will kind of thing. So as a kid, just feeling very helpless, I have no control. We moved overseas. We moved across the country when I was in elementary school. Didn't have control over that. We moved overseas in high school. Didn't have control over that. And again, God was working. He needed to get us to a certain place where it would then knock over other dominoes and we would get on the path we needed to be on. But it was very hard. Like, I didn't have a choice. I had to. And then even coming back from overseas to live with a family from church my junior year of high school, I also felt helpless in many ways in that situation. And there was suffering that I experienced, and a lot of it was in silence. And a lot of it was like, I should be grateful that they're taking me in. I should just be grateful that I can go to a U.S. high school. It's kind of like, sit down, shut up, be grateful for what you have. And not that anybody told me that, it was just what I had learned. It was one of those things that became the pattern. That set the foundation for how I operated in these other settings. And so this is why I think we suffer so much in silence when it comes to our marriages. And often we don't realize what is toxic, what is dysfunctional, or what is abuse. So we ourselves don't realize how bad it is. But then also, in order to stay in denial, we can't share how bad it is. We can't share to somebody else. We can't share to ourselves. So this is what I often find is that I didn't want to talk bad about my husband. So when I did go to seek therapy, counseling, go talk to a pastor or pastor's wife, one, they didn't always have very good advice or help or support. I don't think they fully knew what was going on. It was like I was trying to explain things, but it was really hard. It was almost like, well, that doesn't seem that bad. Or, oh, I'm really sorry you're going through this, but just tough it out. God is with you. Or like one pastor, probably one of the most helpful ones, was like, look, this top layer issue that you're coming to me for is not the real issue. There's something deeper. And I was like, what is it? Tell me what it is so I can fix it, so I can solve it. And I don't know if he had an inkling or a thought about what was going on, or if he just knew and sensed, okay, this isn't the real thing. But I don't know that he had the training or capacity to be able to help me figure out what was. I tried in many ways, but I think also I was trying to save face for me. I was trying to save face for him. I wanted to protect his reputation. I also wanted to protect my reputation and how I was viewed if I stayed with him. Because what would other people think if I came in and shared some negative things? Then what? And when there is especially emotional abuse going on, it's not just words. Like sometimes it is words that are said, but a lot of times it's tone, it's attitude, it's the volume, it's the withdrawing. It's things that we don't even realize are dysfunctional. So we have a really hard time explaining them. But heard some well-meaning Christian teachers, pastors, wives push this narrative of never talk bad about your spouse, especially to other family members, but like never talk bad about your spouse. And on one hand, I think that's helpful. And on the other hand, it's like, then you never tell people how bad things really are, and you never get the help and support that you need because you keep playing this facade. You keep playing this role of having this picture perfect marriage on the outside, and on the inside, you're dying. You're miserable. I think of the book Real Marriage by Mark and Grace Driscoll. If any of you have read or listened to that one, I remember I was in Bangladesh when I read it. I think it was like 2010, maybe 2011-ish. I remember reading that. And in there, the pastor, he'd said Grace, his wife, had a problem of going to her mom to talk about him. It was positioned as like, this was really bad that she shared details about their marriage. She shouldn't have done that. And so I'm like, oh, it feels very isolating. And I don't think people mean that. I think it's like we don't want to be really demeaning, right? We don't want to be demeaning of our husbands. So it's don't be saying like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he left his shoes in the middle of the floor again. And like, this is so ridiculous. But the dysfunction that you experience in narcissistic relationships is well beyond shoes in the middle of the floor. It is really bad, but we are told never talk bad about your spouse. So how the flaming hell are we supposed to get any help? You just think it's normal. And you think this is what marriage is supposed to be like. And we're told marriage is hard. We're told in Christianity, you're going to suffer at times. This is just your cross to bear without realizing, no, this is a problem. But because you also grew up with it, that seed has been planted and then it gets reinforced through these other ways as we become adults. We never get the confirmation that we need of it is that bad. This is not okay. You are not the problem. And I think sometimes that's it. It's like we think we are the problem. We are told we are the problem. So if you feel responsible for the way that your spouse or your ex handled things, for his withdrawal, for his blow up, for whatever it was, it's I made the mistake. It was really my fault as to why he did this. We keep minimizing. We want to see the good in people. So we minimize, we justify, we excuse. And I would say that was a lot of it for my relationship too, was thinking like, oh, he was in the military for a while. Oh, he's transitioning out. Maybe there's some PTSD or some things that he's wrestling with, right? It was like really giving the benefit of the doubt and just trying to sweep so much under the rug. And again, I think sometimes it's this protective mechanism of when you share and you speak out loud to somebody else, you acknowledge the truth. It's no longer a secret, but it also means that you can't be in denial anymore. And sometimes we're just not ready for that. Like it is this protective mechanism of I have to internally lie to myself, or by lying to myself, I inadvertently lie to somebody else. Otherwise, our entire world crumbles. Because when this person is not just a spouse, but somebody that you need emotional support from, somebody who's meeting your emotional needs, it's very hard to walk away. When they're meeting physical, financial needs, it's really hard to walk away. When you have this trauma bond, when sometimes they're so sweet and so loving, and you have some really good times too, it's really hard to walk away. And we hear these terms and these concepts of don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Don't throw away a really great marriage where sometimes he's really great and really amazing just because sometimes he has some issues. Sometimes he's a little upset. Sometimes he can't control his anger. He is human. You just need to forgive and forget. You need to forgive 70 times seven. I think there are some good intentions here, but it gets misused. And what often I think can be good advice, or some people try to say is good advice, is actually spiritual abuse. I had the huge benefit of being able to see and work with a pastor for a few months who not just was a Christian counselor, but had done a lot of research and understood various types of personality disorders and understanding that there's a spectrum that people fall on. And even without a diagnosis, because most of the time these people don't have a diagnosis, that's okay. But the characteristics that they show up with, there is a pattern of really toxic behavior and you know it. So this is not about needing to label the other person. This is not about trying to get them to admit to anything. You know your experience. And I guarantee this resonates with you as well, because you also spent many years, maybe even decades, suffering in your marriage, suffering in silence, maybe alluding to the fact like, oh, we're going through some troubles, or like we've hit a rough patch, things are a little difficult right now, when really you're going through a lot of trauma. But this is what we learn as kids. It gets reinforced from the church. And my biggest criticism of the church at large, right? Not individual churches, but in general, the church as a whole, I think, tries to protect the institution of marriage over individuals. I'm really grateful because I see my church as they don't, but there are some individual people within the church who I know do. One of them even said, oh, my dad's really abusive, but by the grace of God, my parents are still married. And my thought was, what a tragedy. That is not the grace of God. That is a trauma bond. That's tragic that her parents are still married and her mom has been enduring 50 years of abuse. That's my take. That's my perspective. some people, and I would say the ideology, is that they value this institution. And so now when you're going to go against that institution, when you're going to go against the community, sometimes you get kicked out. Sometimes you feel bad. You feel shame because you're doing the wrong thing. You're doing the bad thing. I know for me, I told myself, divorce is not an option. We are now married. We are going to figure this out. Divorce is not an option. And it was a big step when I put divorce on the table and I had to say, okay, divorce has to be an option. My personal view is that divorce should not be you made me upset, so now I'm going to threaten you with it. It should not be the sword that we use and that we bring out all the time that we're constantly looking at. My view is like, it should be more of a last resort, but it should still be an option. It should be on the table, but not necessarily something that we're constantly looking at and constantly thinking about and constantly thinking, maybe we should just get divorced. We shouldn't be so quick to use that. I think a lot of times when that gets thrown around, it's being used as a weapon. It's being used to trigger and poke your abandonment wound and your fear there of being abandoned. And so often if that gets used to get you to comply, sit down, shut up, follow along, do what I'm telling you to do. So we suffer in relationships a lot, especially in silence, especially when we're comparing ourselves to everybody's highlight reel and we compare ourselves to all of the people we see at church on Sunday who have it all together and put their best foot forward and Sunday best dressed and all of those things, right? So it can be really difficult to break free from that. And I also know that we suffer in silence around our bodies. When it comes to our relationship with food and how much time and mental energy and bandwidth we spend thinking about food, obsessing about food, trying to burn off what we ate the day before, we suffer in silence when we are caught in these habits of restricting just to end up binging. We suffer in silence with all of the emotional eating and binge eating and emotional drinking, turning to something or someone to meet our emotional needs. And I know for me, I didn't want anybody to see me struggle. I didn't want to show my scars. I didn't want to be the one struggling with this. But for a long time, like from the age of 18 until I was in my early 30s, I really wrestled in my relationship with food, with my habits, with my weight. And there was a lot of shame around my eating habits, shame that I couldn't just say no, shame that I didn't have more willpower to just eat less and exercise more, especially when that's what we're taught in the diet culture. I remember breaking down in front of my ex one time and I was just having a moment and cried in the hallway. And he was like, it's okay. You just got to have more willpower. You just got to eat less and exercise more. He just was reinforcing the narrative. And I'm like, I can't do it. And so it was really hard. We suffer in silence just in our bodies when it comes to getting dressed in the morning and opening up the closet and looking at, okay, what am I going to wear today? There's suffering as we struggle to get up flights of stairs or to move comfortably or just in our daily lives. And that's what I want to help you break free from. Part of my view and the way that I see my role and leadership for me is I'm going to go first. I'm going to share first and I'm going to do first and I'm going to open up space first and I'm going to create the space where you can come in if you want to. This is all as you feel led to where you can get the help and support that you want. You have a space where you can have someone to help you work through and process your emotions, to heal from the trauma, to heal from diet trauma and past diets and negative thinking, negative thoughts from people from years, decades ago, so that they no longer have a hold over you. They no longer have power over you. And I would say this aspect of it being silent, it being secret, is there's this power imbalance. And often I think that's part of the narcissistic dynamic. It's part of toxic and dysfunctional relationships is there's a desire for control and power. And often there's some kind of power imbalance. And within certain Christian communities, this gets bred through the Bible and through teaching. We can learn it and pick it up in various ways because we are silent, because we're trying to protect our reputation, protect their reputation. We don't want to admit things to ourselves because then what? We keep all of this in because we have to keep it a secret. And now there's power. There's power in the secret. And we are also not perfect. And so we have also been used to bringing up issues with people and then they bring up our faults. It's, I wouldn't have done this had you not done that. Or, you're not perfect. You better look at the log in your eye before you look at the speck in mine. A lot of these people, they are good at blame shifting, at putting things back on you. And I remember in the first couple months of living with my ex, I remember it was like in the first 6 months, I learned it was not safe to bring up issues with him because he would just put it back on me. I remember trying to have a conversation and bring something up with him, and I'm sweeping the floor and I'm like, what the hell just happened? How did I become the problem and I'm the issue and he now doesn't have anything to work on? Like, what? I was so confused. And I spent a lot of our marriage feeling really confused. The confusion, that is a clear sign. That is a hallmark of emotional dysfunction, emotional dysregulation. Something is not right. If you feel confused in your relationship with anybody, a parent, a sibling, a spouse, a boss, a friend, if it is confusing, if things don't make sense, they don't add up, that's a giant flaming red flag. But this is what we do. And so this is part of why I was in depression for 2 months, which in the grand scheme of things is not very long, but it just the heaviness of it felt so heavy and so long. And so March and April, I was suffering in silence. I didn't want anybody to see me struggle. I didn't want to be told I was doing it wrong. And even with friends, I didn't want to tell them because I didn't want to be a downer. I knew they were going through their own stuff, their own stress. They had their own issues. I didn't want them to be worried about me, or there's also a thought of they can't really help me. But I think part of it too is being seen as, I don't want to be seen as less than. I don't want to be seen as not enough. And so we suffer in silence. And whether you are happily married or divorced or maybe going through the divorce process, or maybe things are shifting for you with relationships, this is important that we recognize and we start to see the patterns of how this comes up in various areas. Because I think also we do this in careers. We do this with jobs. We do this sometimes in, if you might have your own business, you do this there. And there's a lot of suffering instead of getting help and getting support. And again, part of the suffering aspect is how we're thinking about it. And part of where we can have control and we can take power is recognizing, what can I own? What is unnecessary suffering versus what is the true heart of, I'm doing something new, I'm doing something for the first time, something that feels scary. And sometimes it's like, I have something to prove. I think for me this year, it was like, I've got something to prove and I can't be suffering like this. I can't struggle like this. Anytime we're suffering and there's this issue, doesn't mean that there has to be necessarily a trigger for it either, especially with the depression that I was experiencing. I think it was this culmination and almost like a delayed effect of really the last 3 years. And there were a couple of pieces, but it was this perfect storm where nothing happened per se in February. There wasn't a big traumatic event. But when I really zoomed out and I looked at the last couple of years, I was like, oh, this makes sense. And I think as you are in your awakening journey, I think a period of depression is probably normal because we've spent so much time in survival. If we're getting out of relationships, we're in survival mode. We're trying to step out of that survival, but it's like there's so much awareness and like these epiphanies and this deep reckoning within ourselves. So much is shifting. And I think it's normal. Not that everybody has to experience this, but I do think that it's normal when you have gone through this type of awakening that is often over the span of a couple years of trying to figure things out. And you now are seeing things that you've never seen before. And now you're telling yourself the truth when maybe in the past you were lying to yourself, when you were hiding things, you were wanting to stay in denial. I wanted to share this because you might be going through a period and a time where things feel really hard. Maybe you feel like you are suffering in silence with food, with your weight, with your body, with alcohol. And I want you to know that there is help and support and things can get better. Number one, we have to stop unnecessary suffering. Number two, we have to be honest with ourselves. And the first step is really recognizing, okay, this is a problem. How I'm handling things isn't working. And even though I have the best of intentions and the best desires, it's not working. This willpower, this trying it on my own is not working. And so if you want some help with this to stop the suffering, to break those patterns and those habits of suffering in relationships, in your career, with food and your body, I can help. I've been through this. I see the pattern. And having somebody on the outside like me can help you see your patterns and see these even more, even better. And I'm going to help you heal. I'm going to help you understand not just where the cycles are, how to break them, but how to truly heal your relationship with yourself, with your body, with food, with exercise, with other people. Because if we don't see it and know how and where to break it, we will keep turning to something or someone to keep meeting our emotional needs. This is why I ended up suffering in other dysfunctional relationships after the divorce, because I hadn't fully seen and incorporated the patterns of understanding how I was needing somebody else to make me feel good about me, how I was looking for somebody else to meet emotional needs for me, which is why it was hard to walk away. Which is why when things got hard, I held on tighter. And there were times when it was like, I had this gut knowing of this isn't going to work. He's not my one. He's not my person. And yet it was so hard to let him go. And I want to help you create a better experience, an easier experience of losing weight, ending emotional eating, healing your relationship with yourself, with other people, and really creating a lit up life, a life that feels so amazing where you wake up each morning feeling unstoppable, where it's pinch me, is this real? This just feels too good to be true. And it is really good. And one of the challenges is that we often are then on alert, we're on guard, waiting for the other shoe to drop. Because that's what always happened in the past. Our narc-trained brain is there to try to protect us. So we can't always celebrate and lean into the success that we're experiencing. Oh, you lost 5 pounds this month. That's great. But can you do it again next month? Maybe you can't. Don't get your hopes up. Don't celebrate too much. What if you gain the weight back? Right? Like our brain is full of all of the thoughts where we can be experiencing success, and yet we don't feel safe to really feel it, to believe it, and to trust yourself that you can maintain it and you can keep going. So if you'd like some help, if you'd like a place where you can learn to process and allow and identify the emotions that you've been experiencing, maybe for years, and like finally have a place where you can do that, where it is safe to feel angry, to feel resentment, to feel frustrated, to feel all of the things that come, I would love to help you. And this is part of what we need to talk about. Is yes, things are going to be really great. I'm going to help you make weight loss easy. I'm going to help you do it while you're on vacation and you're living your life and you're creating amazing results. And also, life will sometimes still feel hard. And I'm going to help you to go through and navigate the hard in a way where you are not suffering. You are not suffering in silence. And we're going to go through the hard, but we're not going to suffer. And I'd love to help you too. Your next best step is to schedule a free consultation. And you can go to bodyyoucrave.com/schedule. I'll drop a link in the description as well, but find a day and time where we can talk. And I would love to help you. I am still doing the 30-30 project. I want to help 30 people lose 30 pounds by the end of the year. 5 spots have been claimed, and I would love for the next one to be yours. So I hope you have a good week. And also know that if you are going through a hard time, it's okay if things feel hard. Lean into the hard, let them be hard, and notice where you might be trying to do the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And maybe even just reaching out for support can feel hard. But this is where there comes a point where we've got to decide, like, what I keep doing is not working. I need some help. I need a new perspective. I need something. I need someone. And I would love to help be your guide there and hold so much space for you. So just know, if you feel like you are in a season of challenge and hard, or maybe some suffering right now, you are not alone. It can get better, but you're going to have to choose to make it better. It's not just going to magically change on its own. This is going to be a very conscious decision, and you get to choose yourself. All right. I hope you have a fabulous week. Here's to creating the life and body you crave.
If this episode resonated with you, it's time to break free from destructive cycles around food, alcohol, and toxic relationships. Your next step? Book your free Break the Cycle call, where you'll finally see why your binge eating and relationship patterns are so deeply connected and how to break free from both for good. You'll walk away with fierce clarity and a game plan to step into a life full of fun, adventure, and self-love. Grab your spot now at www.bodyyoucrave.com/BTC. It's time to break the cycle. I'll show you how.